The illegal wildlife trade in Africa has been widely reported, but many wildlife conservationists argue that the illegal wildlife trade is doing far more damage in Asia, home to more than half the world's population, and to a wide variety of unusual and rare animals. The problem is particularly acute in Southeast Asia. In the first part of an NPR National Geographic Radio Expedition series, NPR's Michael Sullivan reports on the illegal wildlife trade in Southeast Asia and the problems it poses both for the animals and for people.
A little more than a month ago, law enforcement officials from nearly a dozen Asian nations and the U.S. gathered in Bangkok for a workshop on combating the illegal wildlife trade. Ravik Husso is Deputy Chief of Mission at the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok and was one of the opening speakers at the U.S. and Thai-sponsored session.
The global trade in protected wildlife is projected to be in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 billion per year and is often linked to other types of transnational crime, including illegal narcotics, trade in armaments, and even trafficking in persons. In the same way that drug dealers steal the future from our children, people that are involved in wildlife crime are also stealing the future from our children.
Animals for trophies, exotic animals for specialty restaurants, and animals for use in traditional Asian medicines. Chris Shepherd of the monitoring group Traffic International says many species are simply disappearing.
The two species of Asian rhinos in Southeast Asia, Sumatran and Javan rhinos, are locally extinct in many places, and some countries have lost them altogether. Freshwater turtle collection in a lot of areas is finished. Pretty much everything in trade is declining.
Liz Bennett follows the trade for the Wildlife Conservation Society, which helped organize the Bangkok workshop. She says the problem is exacerbated by Asia's rapidly growing population and the demands that population makes on the land. In Central Africa, for example, there are roughly 100 people for each square kilometer of forest. In tropical Asia, Bennett says, there are more than 550 people per square kilometer.
It's a huge problem because the forest is basically like an unguarded bank. Every single product in the forest is of value, particularly wildlife, because you can sell every bit of every animal. Basically, the forests here are shrinking in size, increasing in accessibility, and they're full of products which anybody can go in pretty much and take out and sell.
And unlike banks, which are insured, forests are not.
Forests are not insured, and if you're doing the bank comparison, we're eating the capital.
Protecting the capital is a major reason why the U.S. government helped fund the recent training workshop on environmental law enforcement. But a visit to Bangkok's weekend market offers a glimpse into how difficult it will be to win the battle against the traffickers.
This market is a weekend clearinghouse for all kinds of products, ranging from handicrafts to clothes to food to animals, furniture. It's all here.
Tony Lynam is the Wildlife Conservation Society's Thailand Country Director and our guide through Bangkok's Chatuchak Market. More than 10,000 stalls, some not much bigger than a closet, jammed into a few acres of land in a city where even a few square feet of land is hard to come by.
There are many species of animals that are on show here, on sale here, that are protected species, not just protected in Thailand, but also protected in other countries.
Most of the illegal wildlife sold here is live animals, and it doesn't take long to find what we're looking for in a terrarium fronting one of the stalls.
That's a Burmese python, that's a reticulated python, that's a Burmese star tortoise, that one there. That's an endangered species.
Any of these have any business being sold here?
No, not at all. I mean, that's completely illegal.
We pass a group of men packed shoulder to shoulder, swapping banknotes as they watch two roosters battle it out in a makeshift ring tucked inside one of the stalls. A couple of shops later, and the roosters' cries give way to birdsong. In front of us is a cage containing more than a dozen small birds in brilliant shades of bright red and green. each no bigger than a tennis ball.
Oh, beautiful. Those are barbets, which are commonly sold as pets, and they may well come from the forests near Bangkok. Or they could be bred in captivity, but more likely they're from the forest.
Can you take them from the forest legally?
No. There's an emerald dove there, and if those were caught from the wild, that would be illegal to sell them here. But most likely the trader would say that they're bred in captivity, and so there's a legal loophole there.
And how long has this legal loophole been there? Is this recent?
The recent adjustments to the wildlife law has made it possible for people to get licenses to captively breed 59 species of birds, mammals, and reptiles. And that's a bit of a problem because it means that the trade can't be controlled.
You're talking about essentially franchising the sale of threatened or endangered species, then?
In some cases, yes.
And by extension, you're also talking about potentially being able to launder birds caught in the wild through these franchises.
That's right. That's right. It's a big problem.
And one that will continue, Lynam says, until states in the region get serious about enforcement.
As long as there is wildlife, the battle will continue. And the way we can win small battles is by encouraging the countries in Southeast Asia and Thailand to improve their domestic laws so that they can actually control and regulate the trade. The international laws that are in place are only as good as the enforcement of the domestic laws. So if countries are letting people trade their wildlife, buying and selling, then it makes it very difficult to control the international trade.
Thai officials who participated in the recent workshop defend the idea of their captive breeding program. They say it will help relieve the pressure on the wildlife in the forest by providing a sustainable alternative. But they also acknowledge that more needs to be done in terms of enforcement. Thai wildlife official Thitiphat Pariyarasit.
Right now, we got pressure from international community, from NGO, that we didn't do enough in wildlife trade. And recently, the Thai government recognized this. We feel that we have to do something to solve these problems. But at the same time, we know that there are politicians and there are a lot of people who are involved in wildlife trade. Right now, the government of Thailand is trying to make a change.
Trying in part because Thailand is hoping to hold the next meeting of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species a year from now, and wants to make a good impression in advance of that meeting. For Radio Expeditions, this is Michael Sullivan, NPR News.
Tomorrow, a surreptitious trip across the border to Myanmar. Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR News and the National Geographic Society. There are photographs and more on the wildlife trade at npr.org.